Foul Play, a murder game played by people whose business is murder. And here to see Foul Play is your chairman, Simon Brett.
Hello, welcome to more death and deviousness. In this week's Foul Play, I'm joined once again by two eminent crime writers who will make it their business to solve the crime on offer. Antonia Fraser, from time to time, casts off her mantle as serious historian and writes crime novels about the television investigative journalist Jemima Shaw. Antonia, do you find the crime fictions a relaxation from the history, or is it the other way round?
Oh, crime's a wonderful relaxation. You know, a juicy murder or two, and I feel completely devoid of stress.
Splendid. Antonia is joined this week by the creator of one of the most appealing police double acts I know. They are DL and Pasco, and they are the brain children, if that's the word, of Reginald Hill. Reg, your creations seem finally to have come right on television, don't they?
That's right, yes. There was a slight case of miscarriage to start with, but I think they've got it right.
Excellent, good. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest investigators. Still, for a good juicy crime, we need more than investigators. We need a vast canvas of characters. And once again, this week, all of them will be played by our Foul Play regulars, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. Enough introductions. Time for a crime. As we listen to Lee reading the opening of this week's mystery, The Body at the Book Launch.
In the Marylebone branch of Dillerstone's bookshop stood all the impedimenta of a book launch. There were cases of wine, trays of glasses, dishes of crisps and peanuts, piles of shiny covered hardbacks of The Pallid Inclination by Marianne Clutton, published by Chatsburg and Caper. The only detail that looked out of place was what lay on the stockroom floor. The body of a man of about 60, dressed in a grubby blue suit. His face had set rigidly in the panicked expression of someone fighting for breath, and his hand still clutched at a pewter hip flask. When alive, he had been crime novelist Frank Branston, ex-husband of Marianne Clutton.
Dramatic stuff. Antonia and Reg, have you heard anything so far that struck any chords of suspicion?
Yes, I'm rather puzzled by why this chap should be described as breathless. I mean, he was dead.
I mean, I think you'll find... I think you'll find his face was set in a breathless expression.
Ah, I see. Sorry.
Antonia, have you got any literary criticism?
Well, I was focusing on the fact that he was in a stockroom, and those are generally kept locked. Presumably this is unlocked, though we don't know. And if it was unlocked, how many people had keys? That was my first thought.
In fact, I think in this particular case, just to give a little background, the stockroom was unlocked because it was there that they were keeping the extra supplies of wine and things for the book launch. Just to clarify that.
So it's a stocked room mystery as opposed to a locked
room. It is a stocked room mystery, yes. I think we need a bit more information. Even as we speak, the officer in charge of the investigation, Inspector Sergeant, is holding a press conference.
The deceased, Frank Branston, was found dead by a member of the Chatsburg and Caper Publicity Department, Miss Emily Sackville Carter. She immediately informed Marianne Clutton's editor, Mr. Tony Blissett. Frank Branston was a first thought to have died of a heart attack, and this is still the case, but it is what precipitated that heart attack which interests the police. In the hip flask he was holding were found Scotch whisky, which was predictable, and this was less predictable, traces of crushed up peanuts. Now, Frank Branston was allergic to peanuts. The police surgeon reckons the most likely sequence of events was Mr. Branston took a substantial swallow from his hip flask. His allergy to peanuts immediately manifested itself in the swelling of his throat and in respiratory difficulties. And it was the panic that this caused which triggered his fatal heart attack. Mr. Branson apparently kept his hip flask in his raincoat pocket. When he arrived at the Dillerstones bookshop, he hung his raincoat up in the stockroom. It remained there until he returned to the stockroom and took the swig of whiskey, which precipitated his death. Also, in the pocket of Mr. Branston's raincoat, we found a typewritten note, which read, "Yeah, there's nothing left for me, Mary Ann, but at least I can see that my death upstages your bloody book launch." Clearly, this could be a suicide note. We are, however, still pursuing other inquiries and have not, as yet, ruled out the possibility of murder. Thank you.
Antonio and Reg, does what you've heard prompt any new thoughts?
Well, obviously, if it's murder, and it sounds murderish...
Murderish.
It must be someone who knows him intimately. So I suppose into this category come editors, ex-wives?
Editors and ex-wives, yes. Reg?
Indeed, yes. I'm wondering why the police think of this as possibly murder when they've got a suicide note. Are we going to get some evidence perhaps from a handwriting expert?
I think you probably need a little more information, and we'll get that from statements given by three of the people who were on the scene at Dillerston's bookshop that fatal evening. And first we'll hear from the girl who was in charge of the launch of Marianne Clutton's book, Emily Sackville-Carter.
Yes, well, it was frightfully exciting for me because it was the first book launch I'd done on my own. Well, no, I've been in the publishing department at Chatsworth & Caper for 8 months. Before that, I was just a humble secretary working for Tony Blissett, as it happens. No, Frank Branston certainly wasn't on the invitation list for Marianne Clutton's launch. No, I knew they used to be married, and anyway, I'd met Frank. He always came into the publicity department when he visited Chatsworth & Caper, and he'd always go on at us about, you know, why we didn't get more publicity for his books. We tried to explain that he was a mid-list crime author and there wasn't really much of a peg to hang media interviews on, but not that he listened. He was almost incapably drunk when he arrived, and he kept going on about how he was going to upstage Marianne while all the press was there. Presumably that explains why he topped himself. No, I didn't know he was allergic to anything. Look, I actually didn't know him personally. Obviously one's awfully upset to hear about any death, but in this case... Sorry. I mean, those headlines certainly won't have done the pallid inclination any harm, really, will they? I mean, anyone in publishing would have killed for a newspaper coverage like that. Sorry, that's rather an unfortunate phrase to use in the circumstances, isn't it?
Thank you very much, Miss Sackville-Carter. I should point out to our guest investigators that what they're hearing in these statements may be the truth and may not. OK, Reg and Antonia, you have 2 minutes to cross-examine Emily Sackville-Carter. Reg?
Yes, in fact, you're saying that far from upstaging his wife's launch, in fact, he has made it.
Well, certainly in publicity terms, yes. I mean, it's an awful thing to happen, but we'll probably make a couple of front pages, maybe the tabloids.
Yeah. Do you think perhaps that's the kind of idea that a mid-list crime writer might get wrong, but a best-selling crime writer might get very right?
I don't really understand what you're talking about. Sorry.
How did you get promotion, exactly?
My father is a great friend of Mr. Chatsworth.
I'm interested in the fact that you worked as a secretary for Tony Blissett. Now, how long was that?
Couple of years. He's Marianne's editor, you know.
I know, and I also know that he was the editor of the late Frank.
That's right, yes.
So I'm just thinking that you must have known a bit more about Frank, which probably this great tragedy has driven out of your, if I may say so, very pretty head. I wonder if there are things you could tell us which have suddenly come to mind.
Well, I could tell you a little bit about Frank. I've never read any of his books. I know that Tony wasn't mad keen, and I think Tony was possibly going to drop him. I mean, don't tell Tony I said that, but I think possibly he wasn't going to be around very much longer. He's not selling awfully well, and he's terribly difficult to publicise.
Well, of course, he isn't around any longer. That's been sort of solved.
Well, that is very difficult to publicise, yes. But he's, and yet somehow strangely easier. But
Yes, well, thank you very much. Time's up.
Thank you.
And now let's hear our second statement, which also comes from an employee of the publishers Chatsburg and Caper, Tony Blissett.
Yeah, right. I've been at Chatsburg and Caper for, 14 years now. I edit both Marion Clutton and Frank Branston. Frank sort of inherited him, really. But, I mean, I've read all his books. Yeah, well, I mean, they're kind of traditional crime novels featuring tough debt collector hero Chuck Matto and his glamorous female sidekick, Debita. Yeah, they used to sell really well, but now, yeah, you know, sensibilities change, political correctness, all that, you know. In fact, I recently had a directive from my publishing director to tell Frank Branston, Chatsburg and Caper, you know, weren't going to publish him anymore. Nah, I'm afraid Frank was a bit of a dinosaur in modern publishing. I mean, can you imagine? No word processor. They wrote his books longhand. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Anyway, I can't pretend I'm not more interested in Marianne Clutton's kind of writing. I mean, crime fiction's so formulaic. But Marianne's a genuine literary novelist. Peanut allergy business? No, I hadn't a clue, as I say. I wouldn't say his death was convenient for me. It's just, well, it wasn't a disaster. You know, I mean, not like it would have been if Marianne Clutton had been the victim. That would have been really serious.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blissett. Antonia, perhaps you would like to kick off this time.
Well, my attention focuses on the note, this so-called suicide note, which we know was actually must have been done by the murderer. Was it typed in his handwriting or what?
No idea.
Did he type? You would know
Frank, no. Frank, if Frank had typed, Frank would have kind of missed between the keys and got his finger stuck or something. Had to call the fire brigade. That was the kind of man he was. Pencil and pen was like all he could manage, really.
Did you, in fact, speak with Frank at the party?
No, but he was tanked. He was plastered. He was, oh boy, if this was like his tree, he was somewhere else. He was out of it, totally. I had actually told him that CNC were going to drop him, and he hadn't taken too kindly, so wide berth, I thought, best plan.
What, in fact, was he drinking at the party? Was this one of these cheap publishers' parties where there's nothing but white wine?
No, Marianne. Yeah. Marianne, classy. We went for chili and red and white. Frank was mixing and calling it rosé.
But there were no spirits?
No. We thought, stick to the wine, keep it classy. No lager, no spirits, no light ale, you know.
Well, thank you, Mr. Blissett. We're about to move on now to a statement given by Marianne Clutton, the distinguished literary novelist and, indeed, former wife of the victim, Frank Branston.
If I'd never clapped eyes on Frank Branston, I could have saved myself 8 wasted years. It's only since I left him 4 years ago that my life started again. Well, he was impossible. Permanently either violent drunk or self-pitying drunk. And as for fidelity, I mean, Frank was one of those men who, in the teeth of the evidence, thinks he's irresistible to women. I suppose I was just another miniskirt for him at first. Late 20s, just arrived from the States to work in publishing in London. I fell for all his nonsense. Even to the extent of marrying him and becoming a British citizen. Frank's work, oh boy, not my kind of thing at all. I mean, I read it while I was married to him. I couldn't avoid it, but not since. Oh, for sure, he was furious when I started being more successful than him. Maybe that was one of the reasons why he killed himself. And the way he did it was entirely in character. Trying to spoil my big day, absolutely typical. What? Yeah, of course I knew about his peanut allergy, but I hope you're not suggesting I killed him. If you think I've bothered to murder Frank, well, you flatter him. He just wasn't worth the trouble.
Hmm. Over to you, Reg.
When you came across to England to work in publishing, which publisher did you work for?
I worked, I think, for Twitter and Shandhouse early on.
Were you a writer when you met Frank?
I did write a few plays, but not really books as such. Hmm. I mean, people say that Frank gave me a leg up. Well, he took one down. Well, I guess that could be true.
Well, that's a husband's job, isn't it, to give his wife a leg up?
I was very interested in your early life with Frank. Did he help you at all with your writing at the beginning?
Have you read any of my books?
No, I'm afraid I haven't. He never helped you, even with your first book. Just remind me of its name.
My first book was called Wisp of Winter.
Indeed, yes. Well, I think I'll start with that one. the public library, I think. But you got on with Emily when she worked for Tony Blissett?
Oh, sure. She's a honey. She's a sweet kid.
And you're happy with her campaign that she's launching? Because she's in a very senior job.
She looks after me just fine.
When you say that you knew of Frank's allergy to peanuts, what form did this knowledge take? How do you actually see him have an attack?
I have, yeah. He couldn't eat anything that had anything to do with peanuts in.
Right. Do you have any further questions to put?
No, not at this time.
Novelist, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Marianne Clutton. Regan Antonio, do you reckon you're any nearer fingering the perpetrator of this heinous murder, if murder it be?
Well, for me, what's puzzling me is finding a motive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apart from being a generally obnoxious drunk, but
yeah.
Then, I mean, if we murdered obnoxious drunks, I mean, half the Crime Writers Association would be dead.
Yes.
I don't really mean that.
And the Publishers Association, indeed.
No, no, I never say a bad word about publishers.
No, no. It's silly of me to do so.
Maybe Frank knew something about Marianne's writing that could be seriously damaging. Maybe he wrote pastiche novels for her. I mean, I'm just sort of winging it here. And he's the only person who knows this, except possibly Tony Blissett. And that would give her a motive to get rid of him.
Well, we've heard some very interesting conjectures, but the next thing we want to do... Ah! Wait a minute. I'm just receiving the information that some new evidence has come to light. So let's go straight over to Inspector Sergeant and hear what he's got for us.
My men have been examining the Ladbroke Grove studio flat in which Frank Branston lived, and it seems that Mr. Branston had quite a taste for soft porn. On his desk, we found a complete set of all six paperbacks in the Naughty Nunnery series by Dolores Sheen. More significant, perhaps, were Frank Branston's own books, of which, well, of course, he had a complete set. I delegated one of my junior colleagues, WPC Bobby, to check through the Frank Branston canon for anything of significance. And in they died with their socks on. WPC Bobby came across the following extract, which she will read for you now. Step forward, WPC.
Chuck Matto looked down at the empurpled, congested face on the floor. Something this guy ate didn't agree with him, he declared sardonically. Or something he drank, DeBeta suggested tentatively. Her blonde hair rippled as she crossed the room. So did her curvaceous body, as she bent down to significantly point to the half-empty bottle of bourbon that lay beside the stiff. Matto whipped a handkerchief from the pocket of his Italian suit and, shielding his hand with it, picked up the bottle. He squinted at its contents against the light, cascading from an angle-poised lamp. "What's that sediment at the bottom?" DeBeta inquired, breathlessly. "Ground-up peanuts," Chuck Matto pronounced authoritatively. "But why would anyone put them in a bottle of scotch?" DeBeta demanded confusedly. "They'd do it because they knew Pinsent was allergic to peanuts," Chuck Matto asserted pugnaciously. "What we're up against here, DeBeta," he concluded grimly, "is a case of murder."
What a turnaround, and what a prose style. Antonia and Reg, has that startling new information changed the way you think about the case?
Yeah, this guy deserved all he had coming to him.
Antonia.
I certainly would like to get the rights to develop the character of DeBeta, though. Since well, of course, there's one person who would have known that book well, and that's Tony Blissett.
Yes.
And, of course, he must know his author's got an allergy. So mm-hmm. I think things are looking rather grim for Tony explicit.
Right. Yes, well, what happens now is that our guest investigators can call the three people who gave statements back to the stand and ask each of them one question each. So, Antonio and Reg, who would you like to summon first?
Should we have Emily back? We haven't seen her for a bit.
Emily Sackville-Carter, would you come to the stand?
Hello.
Thank you.
Did it ever occur to you that the late Frank Branston could have helped Marianne Clutton seriously with her books?
Well, I think you've just heard a bit of They Died With Their Socks On, haven't you? I'd never read that, actually. It's quite good, really. But Marianne Clutton's books were really much more deep and intense than that.
Have you ever come across the Naughty Nunnery series? Have you read any of those?
No, I haven't. That's not really not my bag. My boyfriend works for Panorama, so I wouldn't know about that sort of stuff.
Who would you like to call to the stand next?
We better have Tony, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Tony Blissett, could you languidly approach the stand?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Have you had anything to do with either the production or the publication of the Naughty Nunnery books?
No, I haven't, no. Naughty Nunnery, not my thing, really, no. No, the whole soft porn thing, not really. I mean, I'm aware of it, obviously. It's a part of the market, and there you go. But no.
Thank you for that very perceptive answer.
Sorry, that was a no, was it?
I think we can take it as a no, yes.
Yes, if you discovered that one of your authors, a very elegant author, she'd been involved in writing some porn under a false name, would that be bad for her reputation if that was made public?
Well, I mean, purely hypothetically, yeah. I mean, I guess so, yeah. But, I mean, Marianne, porn, two don't go together, you know? I mean, she is a sensitive author. She writes about the soul, loss, gain. She manages to contain two opposites in the same sentence, almost sometimes the same word. It's amazing.
Actually, I mean, it's...
Thank you very much, Mr. Blissett. And now you have the opportunity, if you wish, to call Marianne Clutton herself to the stand. Marianne, if you would be so kind. Thank you.
Were the books that you wrote for Chatsburg and Caper the ones which set you, what was the first one called, the Wisp of Winter?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember that well. Loved that book. Loved the movie, too. was that, in fact, your first piece of prose?
I never
fiction?
Wanted Meg Ryan to be in that, can I say? That was not my first choice.
Was that your first attempt at prose fiction, or had you tried?
Well, I had written another one called The Secret Garden, but then I had to pull that back because there was already a title of that name.
Well, Marianne, perhaps you were one of those very unlucky authors who actually writes books that are extraordinarily similar to other people's books. And that, most unfairly, can lead to suits of plagiarism. Does that ever happen to you?
Well, I think, you know, Tony's very good at keeping me in check. And certainly you won't see anything in the palette inclination that you've ever seen before, anywhere.
I'm afraid that is the end of your investigation, guest investigators. Antonia, who do you think was responsible for what seems from all accounts to have been a very public-spirited act, the murder of Frank Branston?
Well, I'm still inclined to go to Tony Blissett. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy with the whole literary history of Frank Branston, Marianne Clutton and all the naughty nun scene, all of that. I feel there is some mystery there which is not particularly pleasant, and I think, therefore, I go for Tony Blissett that somehow it was to his advantage to shut Frank Branston's mouth quickly. So right. I go for him.
Well, I agree with Antonia about the motive. But I don't think that either Marianne or Tony can have done it, you see, because they are very important people at this party. This person has had to crush these peanuts and go into the storeroom to open the flask and put them in.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect it's Emily. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's acting on behalf of Tony, whom she fancies like mad. And, of course, she got this sort of horizontal promotion. I think that Emily actually did the deed.
Right. So Antonia goes for Tony as the perpetrator and Reg goes for Emily. Well, if I knew nothing about this case, I'd be entirely convinced by both of the hypotheses that our guest investigators have put forward. But is either of them actually right? It is time for all to be revealed as we listen to this week's Foul Play, Foul Playlet. Lee and Maria will now take us to Dilliston's bookshop half an hour before the launch of Marianne Clutton's latest novel, The Pallid Inclination, was about to begin.
There were three in the bed, and the little one said, "Hoo-hoo-ha, hoo-hoo-ha."
Mr. Branson, I'm sorry, but this is a private party.
Oh,
and
get lost, darling. If I want to come to my ex-wife's book launch, then I will. I'll just hang up my coat and
go. Mr. Branson!
I say, you're all pretty little bit of stuff, aren't you? What are you doing after the launch, eh?
Oh, Mr. Branson, please, will you stop that?
Oh, how you like it, really.
Upped your old tricks again, Frank, I see.
Man, what a pleasure.
Oh, you run along, Emily. I'll deal with him.
See you later, sweetie, for our date, eh? Ooh, I say,
oh, God, you're disgusting, Frank. What are you doing here anyway? I think you better go home.
Oh, no. I'm not going home. All the literary press are going to be here in half an hour, aren't they?
They sure are.
Well, I've got a much more interesting story for them than anything in your sensitive new literary novel. I'm going to show them this.
How did you find out about that? Don't you dare.
Honestly, man, darling, what did you take me for? I've got copies.
But, Frank, you could ruin everything.
That, my angel, is exactly what I plan to do. Now, let's see if that pretty little girl has got any booze open yet.
Frank! Tony? Tony?
Yeah, Marianne, what is it?
Tony, there's something I need you to help me with. Now listen while I tell you. And both of our reputations could be ruined.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. But are you sure there's no other way?
Tony, I have had a very attractive offer to take my books to Hedder and Hardwick.
Oh, no, you mustn't do that. Basically, if I just grind up the peanuts between these two ashtrays, like so...
That's right.
And could you pass me the hip flask?
There you go, Tony. We're in this together, you know, don't you?
Ah.
What on earth are you two doing in there?
Oh, dear.
And you're in it too, Emily. There was a typewriter in the office. Emily, you're going to type a note with the exact words that I... And we all provide alibis for each other. As I said, we're all in this together.
Yeah, but, like, don't you think,
I'm not really sure I like the idea of... Are you arguing with me? Because the managing director of Hedder & Hardwick is going to be here any moment now.
Good heavens, no, Marianne, no.
Good. Well, you two go and see that everything's ready for my launch.
Okay.
And, Tony, tell Frank I'd like a word. Now, what else has he got in his raincoat?
What are you doing, man?
I'm taking the other copies of your document, Frank.
That doesn't worry me. I can still talk, you know. I'll tell the journalists your little secret. God, I'm thirsty. I need a proper drink.
Really? Good.
Yes. You know, I'm going to enjoy putting pay to your career as a literary novelist.
Are you, Frank?
Oh, yes. I would... What's happening? What?
What's happening is that you've just taken a large mouthful of peanuts, Frank.
Peanuts? But I...
And I know you can be saved if you're rushed to the hospital in double quick time.
Yes.
But nobody's going to rush you anywhere, Frank. You're going to die right here. And that way, Frank, nobody will ever know that I once wrote soft porn under the name of Dolores Sheen.
Well, Antonio and Reg, I can't deny that you were both right. I mean, both Tony and Emily were perpetrators. So indeed was Marianne. It was the old conspiracy plot. Bit of a cheat, do you think?
Possibly, but at least we got the reason right, didn't
Absolutely,
we?
You did. Yes, I think, you know, you can leave with your detective heads held high.
Yes, on a pike.
And that's it for this week's Foul Play. My thanks, as ever, go to our infinitely various cast, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. And many thanks, too, to this week's guest investigators, Antonia Fraser and Reginald Hill.
play was devised and written by the chairman, Simon Brett. The producer was Anne Jobson.